Good morning. It is Monday, the 4th of May. I had to check real quick to make sure I did change out the calendar. Joining us for a remote talk shop this morning is Brian and Chief of Police here in Eureka, Steve Watson.
Morning, Steve. Morning, Winston. How are you today?
Well, good morning to both of you, too. I'm well, thank you. And I hope you're recovering nicely.
Recovering, yes. Nicely, no. I have a raging attitude. Oh, man, I don't know. Have you ever gone through one of these major jobs?
No, and it's not on my bucket list.
Yeah, no, that would not be one of life experiences I would suggest to everybody. But it is what it is, so we keep plugging along, right?
That's all you can do.
Yeah. Alrighty, Winston, are you ready for why do we say that?
Of course. Are you ready, though?
Oh, I'm not even going to use the computer here to cheat.
Pup tent. How did the pup tent get that name?
Okay. Steve, you got a shot at that one?
You know, I'm wondering it has something to do with from a dog tent, so kind of it's military slang for a shelter tent. I know in the Army I was issued a shelter half, along with my partner and shelter half, and you both had to have your pieces to put it together or you're going to have a cold night.
Okay. Well, you're on the right track there. These tents
are... What I was thinking is maybe because it's a smaller tent and puppies are smaller than adult dogs.
All right, well, you both were on the right track. These tents are smaller than other tents and were named by the Union soldiers during the Civil War. When they were introduced and the soldiers were told to use them, they appeared so much like dog kennels to the men that one of them stuck his head out and began to bark. The idea took hold and soon the whole camp was barking. The tents were therefore called dog tents. The name soon degenerated into pup tents.
That probably wouldn't be a good way to hide your position from the enemy, however.
Probably not. Yeah. I can definitely say they're on the smaller side for two people.
Yeah. It was a really short-lived new tradition. Oh, boy. So we had the fire over the weekend, Steve. Anything that you can share about that? I know it's more of Sean's territory, but was there anything that you want to share with the community about that whole event?
No, I don't have any updates on that yet at this time.
Okay, good. So there was no traffic control issues associated with it, right?
Well, not anymore.
Yeah. Amazing how that stuff kind of clears up. So what has been your guys' experiences during the shelter or phased in, phased out, whatever we're calling the situation that we're in right now? Are most people kind of playing by the rules so far?
You know, I think as a whole, most people are being socially responsible. Obviously, there's still plenty of examples of people not following the letter of the shelter-in-place orders, but I think when you look at the big picture, enough people are following at least the spirit of it that it's made a difference. It certainly does feel that people are reaching kind of the end of what their tolerance level is without at least some kind of outlet. Fortunately, I think we're in a place where we're getting real close, maybe even a matter of a week or two, where these restrictions are going to start to ease. I don't think they're going to be fully released. I don't think we're going to go back to normal for some time, but I think we're going to find more and more ways where we're able to kind of get back to life.
Yeah, fatigue is a term that I'm using, too, just mental fatigue. Okay. Particularly with us, because we started so much earlier than so many other areas. We're almost 2 months
right
now. You know, it's interesting. Is it wearing on the troops also?
You know, but not. I think overall, from what I'm seeing, I try to make a point every day of wandering around, sticking my head into various offices and sections of the department, and talking to our patrol officers to give them a little bit of encouragement, see how they're doing, and kind of get a pulse of the department. And my supervisors are reporting the same thing to me as well, that the people are doing actually pretty well. They're hanging in there. Their spirits are up. There's some frustrations, you know, both with the restrictions in their personal lives and some of the changes at work, but I think they're holding on well.
What kind of changes are you implementing procedurally through the department? Just the normal stuff that everybody's kind of doing, or is there anything specific to public safety or the law enforcement branch?
Well, you know, certainly this is an evolving set of procedures as you kind of adapt to the situation. But you spoke how our area started early with the shelter-in-place stuff, and that's even more true for some of our local public safety agencies like Eureka Police Department, who saw this coming and began to get out in front of this even earlier than that with implementing certain safety procedures and changes. So, you know, we're practicing what we preach here at the Eureka Police Department, you know, social distancing, taking morning roll call or some of our staff meetings and either doing them remotely, like through Zoom, or moving them to a different venue where you have much more space and you can spread everyone out at least 6 feet. Boy, we're sanitizing and decontaminating and cleaning like crazy multiple times a day down here. Everyone has personal protective equipment, and we have rules about when you need to wear it and for how long and what type. You know, and the list goes on. We do a lot of stuff by appointments through our front office right now, so we don't have a crowded office. So people either wait outside, or we've spaced out the few remaining chairs that we didn't remove so that people can keep proper distancing. Yeah, and the list goes on. We can talk about that for the next hour. It's a lot, but a lot of it's common sense, and we've just kind of grown into it as this thing has progressed.
That's what I was going to wonder, or was wondering, if this is going to become a bit, it's becoming habitual enough and it's not that challenging to continue. I think some of this stuff really points out how Pollyannish we were about some of the things that we accepted before this.
I think you're right. I mean, I think everyone just figured that they're probably going to get the flu, and they didn't worry about it that much. But what we're looking at today is something that at least so far appears to be, for a not insignificant portion of our population, much more severe than the flu. Fortunately for most people, they do okay. But I think it's taught us a hard lesson, and there's more that we can do to prevent the spread of illness. And I think for a long time to come, people are going to adjust some of their habits, especially as this thing continues. And certainly we're going to have to, for the next year or so, be a lot more careful and mindful of things like washing our hands, social distancing, particularly during the times when whether it's the flu or other similar illnesses like COVID are spreading around.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Eureka Police Chief Steve Watson. Steve, some of the different challenges that are out there, the frustrations. You know, you've got frustrations from the general community. You've got frustrations from the business community, the healthcare community. I mean, there's a bunch of different areas where people are being pushed into areas that nobody really wanted them to go to. We've seen protests throughout the state about opening businesses up, opening the beaches up, things of that nature. We haven't had any of those here, but are you getting that some of those sentiments expressed to the troops out in the field or yourself personally?
You know, I think there's a wide range of opinions in our community about that. There's some that certainly feel like the breadth and scope of these restrictions really equate to the government having overstepped their boundaries and even arguably violated the Constitution. At the same time, I get legal updates and briefings that, you know, and opinions that seem to say, no, that's well within, you know, they're right at this point. for the governor or the public health officer to make these kind of decisions. And yeah, I think you get a wide range of opinions that fall in between that. Most people, for the most part, I think, are realizing this is an unprecedented and significant event, that there are real safety issues, and they're trying to do their part. But how long people can continue at this current high level of restriction is certainly in question. And I think we need to get to where we can begin to loosen things up, hopefully responsibly, so we don't go back to square one, but we can begin to let the economy breathe and people, continue with their lives. I think it's going to still look different than what we were used to 6 months ago, or even 3 months ago for a time, but we'll get through it. We have had, I think, 3 protests in Eureka already, with another one, I believe, scheduled on Friday. These have been modest in size, and for the most part, people have been respectful. They're not out there to, block traffic or do things that would force the police department to get involved. They're just expressing their concerns and exercising their right to gather peaceably and protest or have their concerns heard. And I have zero issue with that. We just ask that people, again, be responsible, not put our first responders in a very difficult place. And, practice some social distancing, wear your masks, something, to do your part while you're being heard.
Yeah, what was it? Friday, I guess, was the first one I was aware of, this past Friday. And I think there are a lot of folks, I suppose that if the governor had expressed, this is the rollout, this is what it looks like, here are our measurement standards as we go along, people could then anticipate where we're headed and where we're going to be, instead of just saying no, 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 and then occasionally lobbing something out there. Were you involved with what Billy Hansel did, or some of that pushback about our beaches, or was that something that he did on his own?
He put out a public statement about that. It sounds like not long after he heard that the governor might have been considering a statewide closure of beaches. And as soon as I saw this, I sent him an email basically saying, hey, I think you're right on, and you can throw my name in if you feel you need to in support of your conclusion. I think it would have been wrong for the governor to close our beaches. In fact, I went to the beach this weekend with my 7-year-old son, and there were a bunch of cars down there, but man, we probably were 100 feet away from the nearest person, easy. I mean, you could have put 90,000 people down there at Centerville, for instance, just about, not for the parking, but the beach is huge. And so social distancing is a complete non-issue unless you willfully decide not to do that. And for the most part, I saw people spaced out in small family units, spread out very, very far apart. And so one size fits all doesn't work. I think that there has to be a recognition of that, from the governor's office, and not only for beaches, but for when we begin to phase in recovery. And, I think that we're getting really close where we can begin to open things up here in Humboldt County, and I hope we're able to do so responsibly very soon, because, again, we really need to get our small businesses back up and running.
Yeah,
people need to get back to their jobs.
Yeah, the sentiment that you were expressing was one that I read in an article in the Sacramento Bee over the weekend, that there are four counties, in the state that have had zero positive tests. Nothing. The small rural Modoc was the one that stuck in my mind. And there's nobody there, but there's no test there. So this recognition that you can't do blanket statewide just because of the size and the magnitude of the state, I mean, it is tough. And I can't imagine where we would be without some of the PPP and some of those types of things that are allowing some businesses to kind of breach this void. I think there'd be a lot more frustration if that hadn't happened.
This whole thing is unprecedented, and I think that, speaking of something you said earlier, one of the things that is so challenging and hard for people is the uncertainty of it all. We can't just say, hey, on this, we're going to do this shelter-in-place order exactly this number of weeks, and then this is what's going to happen so that people can plan. You know, there's just a lot of uncertainty. This is fluid. There has to be a degree of flexibility so that we can adapt as the situation changes and in cases ever flow substantially. I do think that it's important for businesses to start thinking right now how they're going to reopen and what that's going to look like, what kind of safety procedures they'll put in place off of the list of requirements and recommendations to ensure to the greatest degree reasonable the safety of their employees and the public so that they can operate and so that we can basically mitigate the risk. And that's what the big challenge is here, is risk mitigation. You're balancing what would happen if there were no restrictions, so that, you know, everything was basically uncontrolled and kind of let nature take its course, versus strangling people's freedoms and the economy to such an extent that you crush it. And then what does that do? What kind of risk, what kind of lost lives potentially, what kind of other fallouts comes from that? And how do you find a balance between the two?
Hi, this is Brian Papstein. This afternoon, Humboldt County Health Officer Teresa Fankovic is having a press conference and will be announcing the formalization of our current practices, formerly referenced as shelter in place. What does this mean? How does it impact you? Find out as we will be talking with Humboldt County Sheriff Billy Hansel this afternoon. Stay tuned here in the 4 o'clock hour. You'll be able to hear that interview in its entirety, and we'll have it on our website later this afternoon.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Eureka Police Chief Steve Watson. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, REDEC, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, and Murphy's Markets. Steve, one of the challenges I would suspect, whether it's from a public entity or from a private entity, is the uncertainty, that open-ended, the fatigue factor, all that stuff that we've talked about. How this normally is the time of the year when you're talking about budgets and budget approvals and all those things that have been yawners for so many of us for such a long time. Are you able to even to put anything together at all at this point, or is it just still kind of a wait and see kind of an attitude?
Well, you know, frankly, you can't afford to wait and see, because the fiscal year ends the last day of June, and you've got to have a new budget in place and approved by either the Board of Supervisors if you're in the county, or by the city, you know, by before July 1. And with all this uncertainty, with no one really knowing what's going to happen with the economy in terms of recovery, how long it's going to take and what that's going to look like, is it going to be a more or less a U-shaped recovery, which would be best case scenario, or something less, we don't know. What we do know is the revenues and sales tax is what cities largely rely upon as their major revenue generator. We know those are off substantially for the current quarter, 8 to 12 to 15% or something like that. And so then you're looking at, well, what condition was that the city in at the time in terms of their rainy day fund, and whether they were already facing a deficit, and all those things roll into what the financial picture looks like. What I think is there's no question about, for many, if not most, cities right now, at least in California, and especially the smaller ones, is, you know, there's some kind of cuts that's going to be coming. It's just how deep those are. And really all you can do is kind of project what the financial forecast is and what percentage of cuts may be necessary to have a balanced budget for fiscal year 2020-21. And then scale it, have a couple different versions. You know, maybe you start out with 5%, but then you contingency plan for 10% or so, so that if worst case scenario happens, you have at least the framework of a plan in place. But really, it's the most educated, responsible guess you can make. I'm not the finance director, but public safety has the biggest cut of the budget, and so these kind of cuts face us by far the hardest. And so, you know, we've got to be creative. We've got to work together to come up with something that allows us to maintain not only essential services, but hopefully the majority of the level of service that you come to provide in the community expects. without going down into truly desperate times where you're only able to offer emergency services. And so that's a work in progress. That's a whole other thing that's taking up the time of department heads and chiefs of fire departments and police departments right now. Not only are we managing the response to the COVID-19 crisis and the impacts on the community and our staff, but now it's budget season and we're looking at managing what that's going to look like for at least the next year. Yeah, so a lot to have on your plate at one time, but it comes with the territory.
Yeah, remember, you volunteered for this. One of the things that I think that the general public may or may not truly appreciate is when the governor puts through an edict, like the spacing in the jails. Okay, you know, now that's something that nobody could ever anticipate, and yet it fundamentally changes the way that you guys do business. And the impacts of the way, the results of the way you do business. Is there anything out there on the horizon that the governor, or that you're either through the governor's office directly or through public safety, that's on the horizon that looks like it could be a wild card to that extent?
So are you referring to the emptying our jails and prisons and or more ill-conceived legislation that the state tends to enact?
Take your pick. There's so many to choose from. Whichever one you feel most comfortable with.
Well, you know, one of the challenges we're facing right now, and it's going to be a while before we can truly accurately assess the outcome of what COVID-19 is both required and some decisions made at the state level. So locally, and this is common for many, if not most, jails, they've worked hard to essentially empty the jails. I think ours is at half capacity or so right now, maybe even a little under, so that they have plenty of space to isolate people. And if you were to get an inmate that needs to remain an inmate that's positive, you can quarantine and isolate them. So trying to protect their inmates, which they're bound to do. I mean, morally and by law, but that means a lot more people on the street. People that normally would be in jail are released, and others that would normally go to jail and at least remain for a while are no longer. They're being cited and released. And so we got to look at the impacts of that. But then you look at what's happening statewide with the prison system and the mass release of inmates back into our community. I mean, I don't think that was thought through very well. How many of them are going to end up homeless? How much notification did we get that they're coming back to our community, and what's the impact going to be? Because I got to say, for the most part, you got to work to get in prison these days and stay in prison. And so those that are in there, I think it's fair to say most deserve to be in there and need to be in there for their specified sentences, because they're habitual repeat offenders and serious offenders, and they're not just going to suddenly come to Jesus the second they walk out those doors and live a law-abiding life. Some manage to do so, and I applaud them and I respect that, and that's the ideal outcome. But many others continue to offend their entire lives. The communities have to deal with that. So what's that going to look like when we have more of these people in our community? I can say for the Eureka Police Department, we just assessed where we're at about 40 days into the shelter in place. We've seen a 30% increase in commercial burglaries, and this is despite a 25% increase in self-initiated proactive activity by our officers. While some other agencies might be parked at headquarters trying to limit interactions with their officers, deputies, whatever, across the state, our officers are out being proactive. We do ask them to take basic safety steps and choose their battles. We want them highly visible. We want them out there patrolling your neighborhoods and your closed businesses. And so they're out there doing this, like, sometimes over 100 security checks a night, and we're still seeing an increase in commercial burglaries. We saw very concerningly violent crime is creeping up, at least at the moment. We saw, I think, a 50% increase in domestic violence reports for the month of March with a 30% increase of domestic violence arrests compared to normal. And so these are very concerning. You hope that when we get through this, the crime will trend back down. I know last year, overall, in 2019, we had some real progress. Residential burglaries are down 33% in 2019, and some other important crime areas trended down. But right now, in the middle of this COVID-19 emergency, we're starting to see crime creep up in certain categories. Wasn't true for the first couple of weeks, but now, six, seven or so weeks in, we're seeing that trend, and that's definitely concerning. But our officers are...
I can't suspect that that's just something that's a Eureka phenomenon. You've got to be hearing the same thing from your buddies throughout the state and throughout the western region, aren't you?
Well, I mean, so initial reports, it seemed like a number of people were saying, hey, our calls for service are down, crime is down, but I'm wondering how many have actually, now that we're 7 or so weeks in, took a new look at their numbers and ran that statistical data like we just did, and I'd be interested to see what that looks like. Our calls for service have mostly remained flat, apart from self-initiated activity, which went up. We're trending slightly up right now, but again, certain reported areas of crime, like domestic violence and commercial burglaries, have trended up relatively, well, pretty significantly for this short window, at least so far.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 844.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with Steve Watson. Steve, so when the comeback happens, what we've been hearing, depending on what flavor of coffee you like, it's going to be a really strong third and fourth quarter calendar year, or it might start, you know, a little bit later on. If that happens, does that provide you the budget relief, or are you guys locked into a fiscal year cycle and whatever may happen during the quarters, if it's, let's say, a 15% overage over what everybody expected, when do you see that positivity coming through?
Well, you know, that's the optimistic side of me wants to believe that. And, you know, we may see, you know, our economy may surprise us because, you know, we are a resilient nation and things, for the most part, we're still humming along pretty well. You know, you hope that there's pent-up demand. But the reality is the uncertainty, people that have took hits to their paychecks, you know, maybe a little bit leery about spending, you know, discretionary money right now. We just don't know. And so I think what most cities are going to have to do, and what I expect Eureka will do, is, you know, we've got a plan based on our best financial forecast now, whatever that looks like. It's going to involve some level of cuts, most likely, maybe even fairly significant cuts. And, you know, if we get lucky and things project better than they were, yeah, you could do a mid-year budget review, or you might take that and go, you know what, we kind of went into our, for the next foreseeable future, we're going to run even leaner than we already are. And if we do get more of a surplus, maybe a lot of that goes towards the rainy day fund, so we're better prepared for the future. And you take a look at maybe a few of the most essential positions or needs in the city and maybe start to meet a few of those. But you don't take the entire surplus and go, hey, let's throw it all right back to normal right now, because, again, you don't know what's going to happen in January. And so I think that you got to find that balance where you're being prepared, but at the same time, there's certain functions that a city needs and services that a city needs to provide, and you can only cut
so deep
before you start to
feel comfortable being up. I'm glad you feel comfortable being up on that high wire. I get a little dizzy.
Yeah. Well, it's not easy. Obviously, I'd love to see my budget not cut at all, because we have the needs. I mean, you look at how our calls for service, you look at the crime rates, you look that we're already running pretty lean. You know, so every dollar is important, but we have to do, you know, our share as well, because we are the biggest part of the budget. And,
right.
You know, so how can we do that and still provide the level of service that we have been providing to our community and that they need and expect?
And that's the game. Thanks for coming by, Steve. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Stay well.
See everybody tomorrow.